And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. Hope you are having a fantastic day out there. Currently 43 degrees. We'll get to a high of near 74 today and even a little bit warmer tomorrow. And joining us in studio this morning from the K-State Extension offices, we have Wendy Powell and David Scrotz. And ladies, good morning. How are you doing today? Maybe I should turn your mics on. There we go. We'll try that again. All right. Well, ladies, before we get started with our main subjects today, you do have a few programs coming up, correct?
Yes. We are presenting a grant writing workshop, and that's going to be a virtual opportunity, but there's going to be lots of interaction. We're kind of getting to be experts in this virtual world, so lots of interaction and hands-on grant writing practice for those in that need. June 7th and 8th from 1 to 4 each day. So it's a 2-day broken up into a few hours each afternoon. You can call any of our district offices to register for that. And if you're also just looking for sources of grants, there will also be some information put out in that workshop as well.
And then coming up on May 19th, so 2 weeks from today, will be the Spring Crops Field Day. This is actually hosted by the Research Center in Parsons that we hold a lot of our events at. So it will be there. It starts at 8:30 in the morning. Lunch will be included, and they'll be covering a variety of topics, including a tour of their wheat variety plots. They'll be going over head blight control, cover crops, soil health, weed control, and pasture fertility as well. So a lot of great information that day.
Our new agronomist is going to be introduced at that program.
That's
too.
Right. That will be exciting.
Dr. Bruno Pedrera is on board with us, and he'll be presenting that pasture fertilization.
So you get to meet a new agronomist. It'll be a lot of fun. Again, that's coming up here in the near future. Well, we'll go ahead and get started this morning. And Wendy, we'll go ahead and start with you. And it seems like a few things you want to talk about this morning, including poison hemlock.
Yes. So now is the time to be looking out for this critter. It's just as dangerous as it was when Socrates consumed it and died, you know.
That's not a good thing. A few years ago, yeah.
Yeah, just a couple.
So the poison hemlock, it's invasive, it's highly toxic, and it's really on the rise. So now is the time to be looking out for that. It's toxic, like I had already mentioned, and we just can't tolerate it.
So what parts of the plant are the most toxic?
All parts. Don't eat any of it.
Throw it away.
Yes. So, and it's toxic to both humans and livestock. So that's what makes it really dangerous in our pastures. So, of course, we know human deaths have occurred when people misunderstand the poison hemlock plant, thinking that it's wild parsnip or wild dill or wild carrot because they look pretty similar. The stem is hollow, so some adventurous kids might want to make pea shooters out of the hollow stems. So just be careful that you know what you have in your pasture. For cattle, poison hemlock's toxic if it's grazed or consumed in hay. So actually, that's all livestock, if it's grazed or consumed in hay. So just make sure that you know where it is.
So that we don't actually accidentally feed this to our livestock or kids make pea shooters out of it, what does the poison hemlock look like?
So it's got these fern-like leaves, and it's a biennial plant, which I'll get into that in a little bit later. But this time of year, it looks like a little rosette that stays really close to the ground, similar to the first year of a thistle. So it stays fairly flat, but it's got these fern-like leaves. And then as it grows, it will have umbrella-like clusters of small white flowers, but they look almost exactly like the same flowers as wild carrot. So that's where things get confusing. There are a couple of differences between wild carrot and poison hemlock, and that's going to be the stem smoothness and then the purple spots. So if the plant has the purple spots, then it's poisonous. It's poison hemlock if it has the purple spots. And Queen Anne's lace, also the wild carrot, same thing. It has hair on the stems, and it does not have the purple spots.
So how do wild carrot and poison hemlock grow?
They're both biennial plants, and they're both in the carrot family. So the first parts to green up in the spring is this little rosette, like I had mentioned earlier, in the first year, and then it bolts and flowers in the second year. So even though it's a biennial plant, you often will have plants that are in various stages in your pastures. So just because you're seeing one rosette doesn't mean that there won't be another plant coming up that will be in its second year. So it can reach up to 4 to 6 feet, even taller, depending on the soil around it. And each poison hemlock can produce 38,000 seeds. And these seeds stay viable in the soil for 3 years. So it's very prolific.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, and it grows up to 4 feet high, as you said. That's pretty tall. Is it kind of like poison ivy? Can you get poison just by touch? Will it affect your skin or something like that?
No, there's not a skin irritant with it. It's just the alkaloids that are inside the plant, in all parts of the plant, like I had mentioned earlier, that can cause birth defects for any livestock that are pregnant, females that are pregnant. And it also has symptoms that include dilation of the pupils, reduced heart rate, trembling or shaking, nervousness, and even death from respiratory paralysis. And just ask me, Kyle, how quickly this all happens.
Well, it sounds like it happens pretty quickly.
Yes.
So it's one of those things, if they're accidentally ingested, got to act quickly, correct?
Yes. So cattle will start showing symptoms within 2 hours. Horses.
That is fast.
Yeah. Horses are more like 30 minutes. So if you are not walking your pastures, then you're likely not going to catch this ingestion and be able to stop it. I'm not actually sure there is a way to stop it, other than getting the animals out of there that have not yet consumed the plant. So there's good news. So it's not really palatable. So animals are not going to be choosing this plant to eat. So they'll only consume it if there's really nothing else.
What's the best way to treat this stuff to get it out of there, just so we don't have that chance of our livestock or horses gnawing on this stuff?
Sure. So it's most susceptible to herbicide when it's in the rosette stage. So whenever we're walking our fields now is when we're seeing it in that rosette stage. You can hit it with some picloram mixed with 2,4-D in the spring or the fall, but it has to be before it reaches 2 foot tall. And that combination, picloram and 2,4-D, is commercially sold as Grazon P+D. The other option, aminopyrrolid and metsulfuron before late May. So if you're going to use this option, you need to get on that. Aminopyrrolid and metsulfuron is marketed as Chaparral. So lots of options here. There's even a few that you can use later in the season. Aminopyrrolid and Rinskor in late winter through early spring can also work if you know you've got a problem. That might be a little bit of a cheaper option. That's marketed as Duracor, I believe. So.
And so now that we kind of know what these things look like and the kind of ways to treat them, just to kind of backtrack just a little bit, how do these seeds spread, and where can the plant be found at so that we can treat this?
Sure. So it's really spread by mowing. Whenever we just spread that out, we just carry it in our mower and our equipment across the pasture. It commonly appears in roadsides, fence rows, along creeks, but we're seeing it a lot in pastures and hay fields. And it begins as a small infestation, and then it just grows because those 38,000 seeds just, you know, expand. For that reason, we have to tackle it soon, as soon as you notice it.
And of course, you gave all those herbicides. Are there any grazing restrictions on these herbicides?
Yes. So whenever you're using any herbicide for any kind of control, you'll want to make for sure that you read the label for your type of livestock and follow those grazing restrictions. The bigger part of that is because toxic plants, as they've been sprayed, they soften, or they can become more palatable to animals. So you want to make for sure that your animals are out of the area until this poison hemlock has completely melted down. We have a nice, a really nice chemical weed control book at all of our extension offices. I have one here in front of me, and it contains so much information. So you can look up your type of pasture or crop field, and then look for the type of weed you're having a problem with, or vice versa, and it will give you chemical options with the rates and additional notes along with that. So lots of helpful information, and there's pages in here about calibration and grazing restrictions, and just tons of information. And these are available for the public to pick up, or you can call our extension office and we can give you the information for the specific plant you're looking for.
So other than the poison hemlock, are there any other weeds right now that we need to be looking out for?
Sure. Thistle's always a problem. Thistle's another one of those biennial plants that's a rosette the first year, and then it bolts in the second year. And it's a lot of thistles are noxious weeds here in the state of Kansas, so you want to make for sure that you're staying on top of that. And most of the time, those need to just be dug out. Hopefully, you don't have a huge infestation of thistle. Blackberry is a question that I've been getting here lately. There are some options to be controlling it right now, but there's also options to control it later in the summer. So anything that, as you're walking through your pasture, you just need to know what's growing there. And if it's not something that you want your animals to be consuming, then we need to figure out a way to get rid of it.
So how can a land manager find out what is growing in their pasture?
That's a great question. So that is one of the things, that's one of my very favorite parts of my jobs, is to go out to people's pastures with them and kind of discuss with them their plans, if they need help with a grazing rotation, things like that, or plant identification. So I'm not super proficient, but I like to take pictures, and I can take them back to the references that we have in the offices or send them up to campus. So if you have plants growing in your pasture, you want to know what they are, you can give me a call at any of the extension offices in the district, or you can send me some really good pictures of the plant.
Now, I know some farmers and ranchers, they don't like to use herbicides maybe sometimes. Are there any strategies for controlling weeds without using herbicides?
Yeah, this is herbicides can be a multi-year problem or multi-year control option, but every control option without herbicide covers multiple years. So fertilize timely, use the correct rates of your fertilizer. So that means getting your soil tested and making for sure you're applying all of the nutrients that are needed for the grass that you're trying to grow, or legume, or whatever it is that you're trying to grow. And then you want to also make for sure that you're grazing properly. So whenever a pasture is overgrazed, that's just a really great opportunity for invasive weeds to come in and take over. So there are some get-ahead tips if you don't want to use herbicide. Also, you could use sheep and goats, and David might want to visit a little bit about that. There are a few strategies if you don't want to use herbicides, but it all takes time.
Well, if anybody would like to contact you about that, or maybe set up you to come out to their pasture and check it out, if there are any other weeds out there, or maybe any other kind of questions, how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. They can reach me at the Altamont Extension Office. That phone number is 620-784-5337.
All right. So there we go. Thank you so much, Wendy, for coming in today and talking about poison hemlock and a few other things that we can watch out for. And we're going to go to break here in just a moment, but we're going to go over to David Skrantz. And David, can you kind of preview what you're going to be talking about today in the 8 o'clock hour?
Yeah. Coming up after the break, I'll be talking about farmers markets and just things to keep in mind if you're planning on attending a farmers market. Many of the farmers markets are now open this time of year, so if you're looking for something to do on a Saturday morning or even a evening during the week, some markets are open then. It's a great activity.
All right, so, and we'll be talking about that on the other side of the break. We are talking to Wendy Powell and David Skrantz from the K-State Extension offices. We have news coming up here in just a moment, but then again, we will resume Greed Side Up on the other side of the break. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this hump day morning in Southeast Kansas. And good morning, everybody. We are back here on Greenside Up on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High joining you this morning, along with Wendy Powell and David Scrantz from the K-State Extension offices. Ladies, welcome back. It's good to have you in this morning.
Good morning.
All right. For those maybe that are just joining us before we get started with your part of the program, David, there are a couple of programs going on around the district. And actually, Wendy, we'll start with you. What do you have for us this morning?
Sure. We are doing a grant writing workshop. That program is going to be June 7th and 8th in the afternoon. And it is a virtual opportunity. But here in Wildcat District, we have gotten pretty prolific, pretty great with virtual stuff. So it'll be interactive and hands-on and a good experience for those that are writing grants or looking for grants to write. So call any of our extension offices if you're interested in that.
All right, David, and you got something for us as well, correct?
Yes, coming up on May 19th, so 2 weeks from today, will be the Spring Crops Field Day at the K-State Southeast Research and Extension Center, which is in Parsons, right there on the corner of Ness Road and Highway 400. It's where we also hold a lot of our workshops and programs. And this field day will be starting at 8:30. Registration is from 8:30 to 9, and they'll be covering a lot of great topics, including a tour of their wheat variety plots. So this is a great opportunity to maybe check out some new wheat varieties if you're thinking about growing something different. They're also going to be going over head blight control, cover crops, soil health, weed control, and also pasture fertility. So a lot of great information that day, and lunch will be included as well. And this is free to attend, so a great opportunity to come on out, look at some wheat varieties, get a lot of great information, and also get lunch that day.
All right. So, again, two great programs going on within the district coming up. All right. Let's go ahead and get started. David, this morning, again, welcome back to the studio. And today we're going to be talking about farmers markets, which are always a lot of fun to go to, especially, you know, since they're usually on Saturdays. I think Independence occasionally during the warmer months of the year, they're going to actually have a Thursday evening one now occasionally. Once it gets warmer, I think once it gets into June. But so what are some of the advantages of shopping at a farmer's market?
Yeah, farmers markets are a great way to, of course, get healthy fruits and vegetables and a variety of other products as well that I'll be covering a little bit later in the segment, and also supporting local farmers and producers while you're at it. And some markets also offer arts and crafts as well, so that is another great opportunity to get out and shop at a farmer's market Saturday morning if you're kind of a last-minute shopper like I am this year and are still looking for a Mother's Day gift. Some also will have flowers and different things like that. And as you mentioned, they're, of course, on Saturday mornings. And then as it gets a little bit later in the year, beginning of summer around June, they're also going to be during evenings during the week as well. So if maybe you need to pick up some tomatoes or something that you realize you've run out of the middle of the week, you can swing by after work to pick those up.
Yeah, they don't get much more fresh than getting them at a farmer's market, that's for sure.
Yes.
So if customers are planning to go to a farmer's market, what should they plan ahead for before heading out there?
Yeah, so if you're working on your grocery list and you get an idea of what produce you're going to need for the week or other items such as meat and eggs or maybe even honey, but you're not sure what the farmer's market in your area has, you can call the market to see what vendors will be there this week. Some markets also have a website that you can visit. And most markets in the area, I know the Independence and also the Coffeyville one, have a Facebook page that you can check out, and many times they'll feature their vendors on their Facebook page so you can get an idea of what will be offered at the market. And then if you plan on running other errands, make the farmer's market the last stop. And this is just to limit the amount of time that perishable food will be sitting in the car if you plan on picking up something like meat or cheese. But I know many farmer's markets, they open pretty early on a Saturday morning, and a lot of people like to get there first thing in the morning. So you might even want to think about maybe going out, grabbing coffee or breakfast, stopping by the farmer's market, and then maybe taking that produce home before you run your other errands, just to make sure that you don't miss out on getting any of the produce. Because I know some mornings I've seen farmers markets, a lot of folks get out and about early, and if you get there closer to the closing time of the market, you might have a limited selection to choose from.
You may be out of luck at that point because, again, I know the Coffeyville one and the Independence one are both extremely popular. And plus, at this time of year, it's really good weather just to be out there. It's not too hot, not too cold. It's very fun to be out there.
Yeah, like you were saying, it is great weather this time of year. So it's a great time to take the opportunity to enjoy the nice weather and also get some of your grocery shopping done.
So what are some precautions people should take while they are at the market?
Yeah, and this kind of carries over from last year where there was a lot of precautions with COVID going on. But it's also just some good information to still keep in mind. And mainly it's choose items with your eyes, not your hands, and then let vendors handle the products you select. So many vendors, they'll do a really good job of laying out the products they have on the table so you can just look over them and see what you want. And then if you tell them, you know, like, hey, I would like a couple of turnips or a bundle of lettuce, they'll have bags ready to go there and they'll ask you which ones you want and you can point them out and they'll put them in the bag for you. Or some vendors will tell you, like, okay, just like pick out the ones you want there, and then they'll weigh them. Some vendors sell things like tomatoes by weight. Others do it individually. And then I know a few, like things like onions, they'll have ready to go in bundles. So each vendor will do it a little bit differently. So just look things over instead of handling every single one, because I mean, you probably wouldn't want to buy a tomato that's been handled by everyone.
Exactly. No, definitely understand that. So if you are heading out there, what's the best way about going to pay for it?
Yeah, while many vendors do have card readers nowadays, it's also a good idea to take some cash with you in case paying with a card isn't an option. Because some vendors may not have card readers and might just deal in cash. So I recommend being prepared, taking cash with you as well.
Yeah, because I do know a lot of people, including me, I very rarely carry cash nowadays.
Yeah, I know now.
And then I go, I'm like, oh, no. So I went to a little league baseball game this past week and I had no cash. I had to run to the ATM to go get some cash for that. Again, if we're heading out to a farmer's market, what kind of items can we expect to see out there? I mean, obviously, a lot of great food.
Yeah, I know most of the times you think farmers markets, you think vegetables and maybe fruit as it gets a little bit later in the year and summer begins. You can find strawberries and that sort of things. But you can also find a lot of great products at the farmers market, including meat. And this includes fresh cuts of meat. And then sometimes you can also find meat sticks and those more type of snack foods. And then also cheeses, honey, baked goods, arts and crafts, like I mentioned before, and a variety of other items depending on the market. I know at some markets you can even find flowers this time of the year, and some vendors will even sell vegetable seedings if you want to grow maybe a few tomato plants or squash or something yourself. So farmers markets are a really great opportunity to support local producers and get fresh produce along with locally raised meat, cheeses, honey, and baked goods. And the baked good selection I've seen at farmers market in the area is pretty impressive. It's all everything from cookies to bread to pies, turnovers. There's a whole variety of delicious looking baked goods you can find.
Lots of great food out there at those farmers markets. So obviously the season kind of determines what produce will be out there though, correct?
Yes, definitely. It's important to remember that this is locally grown produce, and the selection may be limited depending on the season. I know we've kind of all gotten spoiled and used to going into Walmart and they source their produce from all over the place, so we can get things in season year-round that typically wouldn't be. Where farmers markets, since it's grown here, it's going to be based on the Kansas seasons. So right now, you can usually find colder weather vegetable crops like turnips, lettuce, spinach, asparagus are a few of the things that are in season. If producers have a greenhouse, then you may start seeing tomatoes and kind of the warmer weather vegetables soon. But you really won't be seeing a lot of those until later this month and beginning of next month. And this is kind of goes back to looking at the farmers markets Facebook pages. Sometimes they'll post what vendors will be there and what's in season. So you can plan. And then the farmers markets that kind of go into the fall, then when you get into the fall, you also will find some of those pumpkins and squash and that sort of thing as well. So it is based on the season.
But with farmers market, at least you know the money's staying local with those farmers to help them out so that they can continue to do well. So
yes.
If we are going to say we get some stuff at the farmer's market, what do we go about washing and handling the produce afterwards?
Yeah, so we, of course, heard a lot about hand washing last year. And it's always important to use good food safety practices. And that means washing the whole produce. Even if you don't eat the peel, it is recommended to wash items such as cantaloupe or potatoes with a brush. Vendors do a really great job of bringing in produce that is clean and ready to go, but just like when you get apples or tomatoes from a grocery store, it's just always good to be in the habit of washing it off before you eat it yourself.
Yeah, so again, a lot of great things about going on with farmers market in the area. Of course, like we said, there's the farmers market here in Coffeyville, and there's also the one in Independence. Get out there and support those folks, because those folks are local. So support them as much as you can. And plus, farmers market are just a lot of fun. You get up early in the morning, you get to kind of hang out, and just check out all the great things out there. And if anybody has any questions, more questions about farmers market or any other thing else, how can they get a hold of you, David?
They can reach me by calling any of the extension offices. The number for the Independence office is 620-331-2690. And I also wanted to mention, I just thought about this, but if you're a producer and you are growing your own vegetables, or maybe you make honey, or you raise livestock and are interested in getting certified to sell that meat directly to consumers, if you have any of those questions about what certification requirements are or how to go about doing that, you can also give us a call at the extension office, and we would be happy to help you out with that and give you some information on what certifications are required.
All right. Well, ladies, thank you so much for coming in today. We really do appreciate it. And we will see you guys again here in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. That was Wendy Powell and David Skrantz from the K-State Extension offices. We love having them in here every other week. We'll have James and Jesse in next week. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to start open line. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.